The driving rain was unrelenting, whipped by howling winds, and the waves crashed against the coast, a maelstrom in the black night. Just offshore, 50 dark figures bobbed, clinging to their buoyant, waterproof haversacks like survivors of a shipwreck. The freak storm was good. It provided excellent cover. From the beach, a pinpoint of red light flashed on and off twice, a signal from the advance team that it was safe to land. Safe? What did that mean? That this particular stretch of Tunisian coastline was left undefended by the Garde Nationale? Nature's assault seemed far more punishing than anything the Tunisian Coast Guard could attempt. The men made their way to the beach and clambered onto the sand. Stripping off their black rubber dry suits to reveal dark clothing and blackened faces, they removed their weapons from their haversacks. Heckler and Koch MP-10 submachine guns, Kalashnikovs, sniper rifles. They were Al-Nahda freedom fighters, natives of Tunisia come to free their country from the oppressors. But they were led by foreigners, skilled terrorists who also shared their faith in Allah, freedom fighters from the most radical wing of Hezbollah. Their leader was the master terrorist Abu Intikab, the father of revenge. Elusive, secretive, ferocious, Abu had trained the Al-Nahda fighters at a remote camp in Libya, refining their strategy on a full-scale model of the presidential palace and instructing them in tactics. 30 hours ago, at the Libyan port of Zuwara, the men had boarded a cargo ship that normally hauled goods between Tripoli and Bizerte in Tunisia. The powerful old freighter traveled north along the Tunisian coast and entered the Gulf of Tunis, just past the naval base at La Goulette. The ship had paused 5 miles from the Carthage coast, where the men launched their rigid-hulled inflatables equipped with powerful outboard motors. Within minutes, they had entered the turbulent waters of Carthage. If anyone in the Tunisian Coast Guard happened to be monitoring the ship on radar, he would see only a freighter delaying its voyage momentarily, then heading on toward Bizerte. On the shore, the man who had flashed the red signal was hissing orders. Abu.
Quiet! Keep it down. What do you want, to bring out the whole godforsaken Tunisian guard? Quickly now, move it, move it! Clumsy fools. The trucks are waiting.
Next to him stood a man wearing night vision goggles. The Tunisians knew him only as the technician. One of Hezbollah's top munitions experts, he was a handsome, olive-skinned man with heavy brows and flashing brown eyes. The technician spoke.
The operation is going smoothly, my brother. The trucks loaded with materiel were concealed just as we had arranged, and the soldiers encountered no resistance on their drive to the presidential palace. We have just received the radio signal from the first men. They have reached the palace. The coup d'etat has begun.
As he spoke, he consulted his wristwatch. 3:32 a.m. Abu nodded. He was a man who expected nothing less than success. A distant series of explosions told Abu and his advisor that the battle was underway. In a matter of hours, the Islamic militants would control Tunis.
"Let us not congratulate ourselves prematurely," Abu said.
The rain was letting up, and in a moment the storm passed just as suddenly as it had appeared.